Down in Missouri, when I heard this lullaby, while the stars were blinking and the moon was shining.
Welcome to Shoney, Missouri. This is Missouri, one county at a time. This week we are in Washington County. We're here at the fairgrounds. It's a good time to be at the fairgrounds because the fair is actually going on. We are joined by a good panel in what is the ag land, kind of a new thing here at the Washington County Fair. We want to talk about the history of the county and what's happening today with Doug Short, the First District Commissioner. Commissioner, thank you for making the time.
Thank you, Scott.
Jerry Sanzagraw, am I saying that right now?
You say it for me.
And you're going to hear a little sound because we are here at the fair, so it'll be a little background noise for you to know that we ain't putting you on. We ain't at the hotel or anything. We're actually here at the fairgrounds. He is the Historical Society, and I think, Mr. Sanzagraw, as I understand it, you are the unmitigated county historian, official-like.
President of the Historical Society here.
Yes, sir. Chris Richards, the publisher of the Independent Journal, known as the IJ. Always good to be talking to another fellow publisher.
Thank you. Good to visit with you this morning.
Get a little of this white milk to go in that printer's ink you got in your veins, you know. Mix it, moderate it out. And Jim Reed, the Washington County Farm Bureau president. Mr. Reed, thank you for joining us. I appreciate it.
Thank you for having us.
And congratulations on this new the new feature you have here at Agland.
Thank you, sir.
And then the presiding commissioner, David Sanzagraw, I guess you had to do pretty well in history. You'd have an earful when you got home, right?
No, actually not.
Maybe that skips generations and families.
Hopefully my kids will have it.
Washington County was founded August 21st, 1813. The sixth county formed. 762 square miles cut out of St. Genevieve County, of course, named for George Washington. Now, Mr. Sanzagraw, I've read where there's two guys that first explored here. One was Lamont, and the other was another Frenchman named Renault. Now, how do you say those names? Did I butcher them too bad?
No, you're pretty good.
Now, the interesting thing, they come through in 1722 and 23 and established two mines. And you know, if I'd established a mine, I'd have called it Mine Fawn. They called them Mine Lamont and Mine Renault were formed, but they were, it's interesting, they were looking for silver, right?
Yeah, silver or gold. Most all your miners come over here looking for that. But they found lead.
Yeah.
and lead was pretty valuable, too. So.
And it became much more valuable as time went on.
Yeah.
But let me ask you a question. I've always thought this. Where the French and the Spanish explorers found silver and gold, you saw an influx and a real change, like in South America, places where they did find silver and gold.
Mm-hmm.
It really changed the history of those areas.
Mm-hmm.
Finding lead here, they were probably happy, but not as happy as they'd have found silver. If they'd have found lead, it'd have been a different part of the county. This would be a different part of the world, I think, if they'd have found the gold they was looking for.
Mm-hmm. It would have been.
They'd come through and tore up all kinds of places and fought wars over it. They didn't really fight war over lead at the time, right?
Right.
Maybe the only time they did was at Pilot Knob. They fought a war over how to get to lead. But
yeah.
A lot of lead there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
As time went on, they formed those mines looking for silver, ended up finding lead, so they left a little disappointed. In 1763, Francis Breton, am I saying that right? Founded the town called Breton. And now that's pretty much Potosi, right? Now, how close are the towns, and what's the lay of that land?
Britain, Mine of Britain is what it was actually called.
Mm-hmm.
It's on the south side of the creek.
Yep.
And Potosi was started on the north side, on the upper hill side, you know. It was started after Francis Renault, Azor, discovered lead. He was the first one to discover lead here in the first place. And the little mining village sprang up from where they found lead. And they named it Mine of Britain after Francis Azor, because he was born in Brittany, France.
Gotcha.
So that's why they named it that. Now the village grew, and in 1814 they started a new town on the north side. Now they were named St. George at first, but that was too much like the British name, which the French and the British didn't like one another in Europe, and they didn't like one another here neither. So it was changed to Potosi, named after a silver mining town in Bolivia.
Isn't that funny that they named Potosi after a silver mining town that they never found any silver in?
No. I guess it was just the fact that we had lead, they had silver, but they was looking for probably a neutral name that didn't have nothing to do with British.
It was the search for silver is what brought folks here in the first place, right?
Yeah.
Let's talk about, as we talk about modern Potosi, on July 17th of 1799, the Spanish government gave one of the most famous Missourians in state history, Moses Austin, 7,153 arpens. Now, I know what acres is. How does an arpen equate to an acre?
You know, I'm not sure.
I would think it'd be a little smaller is what I've read. Now, that was something the Spanish and French used, but the English were using acres, and obviously acres won out, but yeah. They gave a really interesting how they set that up, and it encompasses where we are today, right? Now Chris, you are a person who's tried to help celebrate and perpetuate the legacy of Moses Austin. Tell us about one of the most famous Missourians we're ever going to talk about on this show.
Well, you know, I think that Moses Austin may be considered infamous as much as famous. People really get to know what, you know. Your reference there is the Austin Festival, which we have. Mm-hmm. We've been celebrating it, I guess, 30 years.
Now, when's that come up?
We do that. It's Father's Day weekend in June every year, the way we've done it. And it's just I always tell everybody, all the folks around here, you know, I enjoy the rural life that we have, and I always tell everybody it's more or less, I consider it kind of like a old homecoming, like they used to have back years and years ago. Chance for people to visit and sit under a few shade trees, listen to a little music, enjoy a little food. And that's what it's based on. But we use Moses Austin because they has that little claim to fame as far as the name goes. You know, Moses Austin started the whole trek to what became Texas, got sick and died, and that's how Stephen Austin went on and took his father's, you know, dream, and that all came to fruition. So we had an old historian here, his name was George Showalter, and he coined a lot of phrases. One of them that I always liked, he called Potosi the cradle of Texas, because Moses was the grandpa.
The cradle of Texas, I like it.
Yeah, Moses Austin's resting place is here, yes.
So after the founding, after they established the county, started to grow pretty rapidly, they put together another interesting fact. There's so many parts of it. You go through St. Jen and here, there's so many historical things that tie back to the East Coast and names that you learn about, other like Stephen Austin. Certainly was very familiar with Potosi and Washington County living here. But the first sheriff was Lionel Brown. He was the nephew of Aaron Burr, and oddly enough, the way I read the history, he got into a duel with a guy named John Smith T.
Yeah.
I guess if you win a duel, you better change that last name or shorten it. It'd be hard to figure you out in the next town. But oddly enough, the guy that killed killed Alexander Hamilton in a duel, his son died in a duel himself. And he was a sheriff here in Washington County.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting history. But in 1815, Moses Austin decided they would grant 40 acres. Now, I understand, though, at Breton there was some flooding, right? Being where it laid with the creek, they had a little bit of trouble with floods. And so one of the reasons Potosi's where it is they needed a place for a county seat, but they wanted to build it up out of the where it wouldn't flood.
Right. Yeah. Austin donated 40 acres, and John Rice Jones donated 10.
Yep.
And they actually built the courthouse in 1815. You know, they advertised for the land, and they built the courthouse in 1815. Minor Britain and Potosi remained separate villages until 1826, and then Minor Britain was incorporated into Potosi at that time. You know.
Well, let me ask you, before the Europeans came here, was this Osage territory?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Who settled this?
Yes, yeah.
They were either the meanest or the smartest to white settlers. Maybe they knew what was coming, so they.
They're pretty good. They're mean and big. They was a big Indian.
Let me ask, it's one of the most interesting questions I like to ask when we get to come do these things, but Mr. Reed, how did your family come to live here in Washington County? You come over from Europe, well, what country,
yeah,
when?
Both on my mom and dad's side, both came from, come up through North Carolina from, come in on the ships down there. You know.
Irish, German?
A little bit of all.
A little bit of all of it, yeah.
English, Irish, and German. Actually, they came into the state, but my dad's family settled in the southern part, here, Reynolds County, in that area down in there, and they were in the timber business and that, and my grandfather moved up here back in the 20s, early 30s, and started establishing, sawmills on the job site, and then they built the biggest lumber company in the county, and for years it was, I guess it's second or third highest employee, having that many employees right now. So that's how I've got located in this area from my dad's family. That's where he was from.
Now tell me about your farm today.
Okay, well, I'm retired. I worked for the state for too many years, but we had a little farm out about 20 miles out of town. And the folks since retired, and they've moved to Terre de Lac and that. But we had this small cow-calf operation. My grandfather, on my mom's side, actually was more of the end of the farming, and he was retired. And so we done a little bit of everything. We had chickens and all kind of different poultry animals and hogs and two or three different breeds of cattle. And about 300, I think we had 40 acres short of a home section at one time out there that we had the ownership of between my aunt, my mom, my dad, and my grandparents.
Commissioner Sandsgirl, tell me how your family came to live here in Washington County.
My understanding is they came from...
No pressure.
Get this right, son.
See if the history lesson my dad taught me. The Sansagrell side of the family, my understanding, came from Canada. Came down through Canada to St. Jean. And
I'm going to assume French, right?
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
I don't know how they ended up in Washington County. That to the historian.
What do you do today when you're not commissioner?
I work for Belgrade State Bank. I'm a loan officer.
Well, Mr. Sandro Sr., how'd the family come here, and what part of France did they come over from?
They came here from France originally. Exact spot I've never been able to find out. But they came down through Kaskaskia first, and then on down into here. They were at St. Genevieve for a while, and they came over here in Washington County. I think it was around somewhere in the 18-teens. It's sketchy to trace them for some reason. And then, they just worked in the mines and lead mining a lot, And, up till now, and everybody just branched off. On my mother's side, they came from England. About 1818, something like that. They come from England, and they got into selling implements to the miners.
Sure.
And then when they got ahead, they bought some land. Oddly enough, the farm that they got, Doug Short owns now.
But they small world.
They had a big farm. Built a Scotch Hearth lead smelter, which is on the National Register of Historical Places, and it's still standing there. And like I said, had a big farm, and they had a store there, and all the other things that go along with a big place at the time. They were slave owners, and the family just branched out down to the modern day. But that's where they came from.
Now, what'd you do for a living?
I worked for Chrysler Corporation in Fenton for 35 years.
Did you just drive up, or how'd you?
Yeah.
At 21's got a little bit of an easier drive over the course of your career.
Yeah, it has. Yeah, it wasn't too pretty back them days.
Well, Commissioner Short, tell me how your family came to live here in Washington County.
It was similar to David's family down through Canada, mostly French.
Mm-hmm.
My great-grandma was half Cherokee, so it's primarily I'm primarily French and Indian.
Just like the war, right?
It's like the war, and they bought a farm out on out in Ebo in 1921 or 22, I believe, and it's still in the family today. My dad lives on half of it, and my grandma's farm is.
Now, whereabouts at from Potosi?
It's about 10 miles out Highway 185.
So you go kind of
through, and then you make a right on Lickskillet.
Lake Skillet. I like that.
Lake Skillet. Yeah.
Always interesting. You're for a county this size, you're probably one of the younger commissioners around. What made you want to get in and serve the county?
Well, sometimes I wonder.
That's a good question. Huh?
Well, I think just to try to make the county better, try to make the county grow, help the people out here, and try to get more jobs in.
What do you do when you're not a commissioner?
I run a cabinet business out in Old Mines. It's north on Highway 21, about 9 miles out of town.
So my dad builds pole barns. Mm-hmm. Now, Dad, he can use a saw, right? He ain't no problem for him to cut whatever. But one time, he's like, son, how's college going? And I was like, well, you know, I thought he was about to ask about grades, and he goes, we were working on a pole barn. He goes, son, there's some eyes and some hands that are 16th-inch cuts. Some eyes like yours, I guess, would be you can cut a 32nd of an inch where you need to cut it. He said, son, you're more of a quarter-inch man. You need to do well in college. I don't think you're going to be able to hit much.
I had a guy ask me that worked for me one time if I knew where there was any three-quarter caulk. He doesn't work there anymore.
I would think not.
Then I farm. Jerry spoke about we bought that farm a couple years ago. We had a farm right next to it, sold it, and as he was speaking about the smelter on it, smelters, as Jerry said, still stands.
What's the name of the cabinet company?
Eagle Cabinets.
Mr. Richards, I know you're a newspaper publisher now. How'd you come to live here in Washington County?
Well, I was born and raised. The only time I ever left was I went to college for a couple years and thought it was a waste of time. So didn't find anything there that anybody could teach me.
My teachers thought it was a waste of my time too.
Yeah, I don't know how that worked out. I mean, I got into the fraternity life and really enjoyed that part, but class just wasn't that attractive. Our family actually got a Spanish land grant the south side of Minor Breton, and it was called the Weber Russ Farm. On my grandma's side. So the Weber family has been here for a long, long time, from the early 1800s. And on my mom's side, she's a DeClue. And if you ask anybody around here, DeClue's related to every other French name that there is. And that all came down from Canada and, you know, followed the river down and all of that typical history that everybody shares. So between the two, that's how I kind of ended up being here. Our family has had the newspaper business since the 1940s, just about World War II.
Is that right? Mm-hmm. Well, that is an impressive legacy to have. Let's talk about the courthouse. Interesting stories around the courthouse as everybody come together. You had one of the largest, most growing towns here in Potosi at the time in the whole state. They had some thoughts. They were going to build a large two-story building, right? And then they actually raised the money for it, selling the 50 acres of plots. Then they had the contractor come in and agree he could do it for $5,900 or so. But he got the first floor done, and that's about all he got done, right? It didn't end up working out. The bondholders came in.
Yeah,
run out of money.
Now, how does that work? Is it just off bid, or do you keep a little in his pocket? Or
I guess they just, you know, a lot of times you see a big building and you want the job and you bid it and you get going. You find out that a lot of these little pretties they wanted, you can't deliver for the price that you actually built.
I guess the commissioners will understand this. I guess they hadn't mastered the concept of change orders back then.
Probably
right?
Not.
Every project had a cost to it. But boy, you'd see that change order, and it was never a change order to save you a little money. Mm-hmm. It was never worked out.
They were wanting the a nice, fancy courthouse because they were buying for they wanted
the state capital.
Capital.
That was the goal. Yeah.
Which would have made a lot of sense.
They lost by one vote.
Tell me the story
St. Charles,
about that.
Well, that was it. That's why they were wanting a big capital, because they were wanting to get the regular capital here. Well, St. Charles, when they had a vote for it, St. Charles won out over one vote for the temporary state capital. Now, then Jefferson City ended up with the regular state capital.
Once they did the Constitution and everything? Well, the drawings they said were beautiful, said were some of the prettiest courthouse designs ever, and it just, I guess it was too pretty for what the contractor could get done.
Yeah.
Overshot a little bit. Now they had they built a new courthouse in 1850, correct?
Mm-hmm.
That served the purposes. They built a log jail. They said a one-room log jail. Then that one burnt, and then they built a brick one. And then another guy, they said both, I read the history books, they said it was two insane people burnt the courthouse. Mm-hmm. Well, or burnt the jail. Well, you know, I don't know that you'd be crazy. That alone would make you crazy, but both those burnt. So then in 1907, the courthouse, if you've ever been to Potosi, you know exactly how beautiful the current courthouse is, and you know where it is. It sticks out. You can see it for miles. Is that the 1907 courthouse that's there now?
Yeah.
Now, that one, it was as beautiful as they probably intended to do it 80 years before. That is a beautiful, that's got to be a sense of pride in the community to have that, and you've maintained it well. I know I've read where you had to do some renovations, obviously, on it, but that's got to feel good that you spent the money to do the renovation to keep it nice like it is. That's a beautiful building.
It is.
You see that, if I saw a picture of that just on its own, I'd know right where that was, and I think it just, it gives you a different look at how the pride folks take in the community, maybe, you know? So we talked about how the jails burnt and things went on. Well, they had a commission put together to pick where they were going to put the county seat. Lionel Bruns Brown, John Hawkins, Martin Riggle, John Andrews. Then they had a few others that set in, and they decided to set, and they picked Mine Breton, right? That's the first plot they picked. Then they had to move that not too long after up to Potosi when they got the grants. I guess it's always just been Potosi and always just works, right? Pretty central in the county, and I guess it doesn't flood here, right?
Nope. Not on the upper side of the. No.
Now this is an interesting thing. I was reading, and one of the biggest stories that was published all over the world was on November 19th of 1830. There was a dispute over cattle that turned quite bloody. There was David and Louise Lago and their son and a very small child named Baby Mary Elizabeth. They lived here in Potosi, about a mile out of town. Then Charles Jotty and John Armstrong, after the dispute was over and the sheriff had come out, and I guess maybe he solved cattle disputes, I don't know. He ruled for the Lago family. Well, those two guys came out that night, and I remember this because my grandparents had a place that you could have shot through the wall. They shot through the wall, but there's a crack in the wall. In the wintertime, they put newspaper over it, and in the summertime, they'd take it off so it could be ventilated. But they didn't have it up by November yet, and they shot through the wall and killed the man. They come in and beheaded the whole rest of the family. It was the most gruesome crime anybody had heard of in these parts, you know, small children and things. So there was a huge uprising. Once the sheriff come out, he knew, because he had just been there the day before, and he knew when that guy was shot that night and killed, he knew pretty well who it was. So they ended up finding the two guys. Put them in the jail here in Potosi, that log jail. Well, that night, about 40 townspeople came, and they were going to skip the trial and just get on to the execution. And it was a lawman that became very famous, John T. Clark, was the sheriff. Young guy, very young guy, for a sheriff at the time. Went on to have a career as a federal marshal later on. He came out and said, he basically said, these boys are going to have their day, but their day's going to come after the trial. Now, it's interesting the sheriff predicted the outcome of that trial, but I think he had a long day, I figure, you know, settling cattle disputes, seeing all this terrible crime, finding these two old boys. So he fired in the air for the townspeople and said, no, you're not. You're going to kill them, you're going to kill me too. Well, the townspeople decided they were going to rush him. He could only fire so many bullets. They were going to tie the sheriff up to, you know, they didn't want to kill the sheriff. Well, he shot one of them. Guys coming to do the lynching, and after that guy, he died much later, but probably the same wound. Then everybody went on dispersed, and they sent him to St. Louis for safekeeping later that night. Right. And of course, then on July 27th, they met the fate they was going to meet anyway, and they were hung. Interesting thing how all those old stories come together, but it was the lawman that was going to hang him, and he did. He's the one that pulled the lever to hang him, but he said we're going to do it after the trial. Which they all thought they knew the outcome to. But it is an interesting thing how back in the day that probably seemed like a natural thing to do. We don't need a trial. He killed a young child and all these things. And kind of gives a mark of that guy and how, you know, the due process, right? Mm-hmm. Interesting things.
Yeah.
Now, before we take a break, I want to thank our sponsors. Every time we do this, we get to come to places like the Washington County Fair here in Potosi, talk about the history of the state because of folks like the Missouri Association of Electric Co-ops, Missouri Farm Bureau, and the Missouri Association of Counties. I want to thank them for letting us be able to come here today and talk about the history of the state. Let's talk about the Civil War. There's a few things that mark every county. The co-ops running the electricity, the farms. the railroads coming through, and then the Civil War. Now, Potosi, Washington County was a little bit safe. It wasn't St. Louis, so you didn't have the St. Louis, and it wasn't far enough out that the in South the Confederates could really do too much mischief. But there was some interesting things. But I'll ask the historian first. It looks to me like every county has a tendency to want to say they had a little bit more Union supporters than they might have had. Usually the winners get to round it up the balance, right? Governor Nixon first told me that he goes, every county today will tell you that they're divided. And he said some really were. But he goes, every county in every state, in every war, in every country, always sides a little bit more like theirs with the winning side all along. What was Washington County? Was this a divided county? Was it a Union, Confederate?
It was very divided. There was a lot of slavery.
Yeah.
In Washington County.
Now, what was that from? Because I'm a hillbilly myself, and usually there's two things. Germans did not, wherever the Germans were not pro-slavery because there's no slavery in Germany. And where there was hills and cattle, there was no need for slaves. It was where there was row crops. And I've been all over Washington County backwards and forwards. I ain't seen many flat spots in the place.
You can have a lot of fields on hilly ground, and they did.
Is that right?
They raised a lot of grain and stuff. And you're true. That's true. There wasn't a lot of flat territory.
Was slavery part of mining at the time?
That was some of it too. They used
that right?
Women or no, come over here. He brought 400 slaves.
Yep.
With him. So you know.
But by the 1850s and 60s, was mining still used? Was there slave labor involved in mining? Or they?
Yeah.
Is that right? So what was? I guess I read by then there was around 1,000 slaves here.
I don't remember it. I read a thing one time where it give the years and mm-hmm. how many slaves yep. were in the county. And one time it was more slaves on the total population. There was more slaves than there were whites.
Is that right?
As far as the count, you know. So, like I said, there was quite a few around, you know. And they used them for everything.
Well, as reading through here, there was a July 19th, 1864, a lot of bushwhackers around. Sam Hildebrand, I think, even slipped over from St. Francis County.
Mm-hmm.
He had a skirmish where he killed 6 Federals, captured 2 of them, 3 of them got away. And that the 3 that got away led to another skirmish with General Ewing from Pilot Knob. He met and killed 6 Confederate troops. August, a little later in the month there was a raid on Webster by some bushwhackers that made out. Palmer, then now it says it's known as Webster. Then on September 13th, there was a confrontation in Caledonia. 50 guerrillas ambushed 14 Union soldiers. They repulsed them, but there was one dead Confederate. And then General Price, after Pilot Knob, he cut through here trying to get to Jeff City, right?
Yeah.
So most of the conflict here does seem like if they'd have got closer to St. Louis, they'd have had a big fight.
Yeah.
And they were further south of here, they could, you know, kind of run pretty much unmessed with. But yep. this kind of fell in a safe zone where there wasn't too much conflict.
Well, they called it the mustering grounds. I guess it would be southwest of here a little bit. And out P Highway and back through the gravel county roads out that way, we call it Pigeon Roost. I don't know what the proper name is. But there's what they call the mustering grounds out there where there's a lot of encampments between the different battles, like at Hoosaw mm-hmm. and along Steelville. And this 8 Highway, or it wasn't 8 Highway at that time, but that general roadway was in at that point, and they would come over the ridge back through the county roads that we still maintain today. What is it, 14 miles through there? But yeah, we had the Civil War, we had a lot of history here in the county.
Yeah. There's a lot of, wasn't any great big major battles, but there's mm-hmm. a lot of small ball stuff and skirmishes, you know. A lot of people left here to go to St. Louis because, you know, they were afraid, you know,
yeah.
a lot of the wealthier ones. The Deloge family, the Furman Deloge, they were here and they left go to St. Louis, you know, and they never came back.
We're going to talk about some of the famous folks that lived here in Washington County after a break. I want to thank our sponsor one more time, Missouri Association of Counties, Missouri Association of Electric Co-ops, and the Missouri Farm Bureau for letting us come to places like Washington, Missouri, and talk about the history of the state. One county at a time, we've been lucky to go to all kinds of places, and we're not going to find a better spot to do this show ever than here at the County Fair in Washington County here in Potosi. We'll be right back after this.
We are Missouri Farm Bureau Insurance, and we're here for all of life's wins. Like when you get a new car, or new boat, or new driver, or when your son moves out, but your mom moves in, or you find out you're expecting again, or when one rental property turns into two, then 20, or you realize they're all in Tornado Alley. Life is full of life events, so call your Missouri Farm Bureau insurance agent or visit MOFBinsurance.com to find an agent near you. And we'll make sure you have the right coverage for each of life's wins.
We're back here on the show in Missouri. This is Missouri One County Time. I'm Scott Fun. I get to talk to you about the history of the state every week. And this week we are joined by David Sanzagrella, the presiding commissioner in Washington County. Thank you for the time, sir.
Thank you, Scott.
Head of the Farm Bureau here, Jim Reed. Thank you, sir, for joining us.
Thank you, Scott.
Chris Richards, the publisher of the IJ, the Independent Journal. Always good to be with a publisher. Thank you, sir.
Yeah, good to visit with you.
The noted historian here in Washington County, Jerry Sanzagrella. Appreciate you sticking with us, sir.
Thank you.
You got the voice for radio, too. You got that kind of Jack Buck, raspy radio voice. I like it. And then Doug Short, the first district commissioner. Thank you for sticking with us.
Thank you, sir.
Let's talk about some of the famous folks that came from Washington County. Of course, Moses Austin, Stephen F. Austin. We've talked about some. I would say they start the list. But the Deloge family, you referenced them. Tell me the history of the Deloge family and their time living here and how famous they became living in Washington County.
Well, they came here. In fact, I made some notes of it, I think, of, well, when they came here. Check out.
You've all heard of the town. Now you're going to find out, if you go up 67, why the town's named Deloge.
Yeah, they were first here in 1823. And like I said, they got in, they were into the lead mining business pretty mm-hmm. good. And they had a big mill and a big furnace also. And like I said, they left during the Civil War because they feared mm-hmm. for their safety, you know. And so that they left and went to St. Louis, you know. And one of their sons was, you know, they were named the Farmer Deloge Hospital after them, you know, mm-hmm. up there, you know. So that... They were here for quite a while, but like I said, they left in the Civil War because they were just afraid, like some of the other people.
Well, I mean, it's such a foreign thing today to try to get your head around what it would be like to have a war on Highway 8. Yeah. Like an actual war where people were dying and burning and taking, they come to your home and take everything out of it because right. they were, it was life and death. I don't think folks here can quite understand, like, what that would be like. It's such a foreign concept to an American to think of a war being fought literally where they live.
I don't think anybody can relate to that.
Yeah.
We've had it too good in here, but they did back then, you know. And it, you know, there's a lot of local stories and things that come out of from different families that tell different things that went on, you know, in some of these raids and some of their homes, you know. And it's just unbelievable from what we live today, how we live today, you know.
Interesting thing, you know, you get down into southern Missouri, like Wright County and places, there's some of those counties that were Confederate counties. But while the Union Army had a depot at Bolivar, they had a depot at Rolla, they were supplied by the government. The Confederate Army had to go forage, which meant forage men, if they happen to come by your farm and they're hungry, they take all your food and your cattle and
grain.
Well,
everything.
Even if you support their cause, after about one time of them coming through taking everything you own, you switch sides pretty quick. You take down the stars and bars, you put the old stars and stripes back up.
Yeah.
And the Confederate Army was supported in many places early, but after they figured out that they weren't just going to go through fight, they were going to have to feed them, and that turned a lot of those counties as the war went on to, you know, the support they once had left as they took all their possessions down the road with them. But let's talk about another Tom Huck, a Potosian, famous... artist and musician. Anybody got any local stories about him?
Who is that now?
He's a famous...
Tommy Huck.
Yeah.
He graduated from high school with my brother.
Is that right?
So I knew him as a kid. His dad was a local chiropractor, and they played folk music, and had bands, and I had made homemade wine, and that, and he had, five kids? Was there five kids?
I don't know.
We had four. Like two boys, two girls, I believe.
Yeah, I think that's right.
And,
I think there is four.
He just went to college, and I don't know where he got the type of art that he did, but boy, it picked up about, 7-8 years ago? Is it maybe 10 years ago now?
Yep.
Yeah, he's been all over the world.
Yeah. He donated us. We have a drawing, one of his drawings down in one of our museums that he donated us several years ago.
Is that right?
Yeah, he's pretty famous with his work, you know. They bring big dollars.
Argus Hudspeth, I'm probably saying that wrong. If I ain't, it's just pure luck. He was a Speaker Pro Tem of the State Senate and a leading figure early on in the state's makeup from Washington County. Then one of the most famous folks to serve the state from Washington County was Governor Dunklin. It's, you know, history comes in fits and starts. You know, there's times when the waters are troubled and a lot of progress and things are made, then they may go a decade without. Governor Dunklin was there when a lot of things happened. He was another one of those famous Washington County sheriffs. Went to the state legislature, then he took some time off. It's always interesting. I meet a lot of people published in the Missouri Times in the state legislature, and it's the natural part of a man or an ambitious man that I got to do this, 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 and this. A lot of them famous Missouri politicians served and took some time off. He had his fill of politics for a while. Then he come back as lieutenant governor, and then he ran as a Jacksonian Democrat in 1832. And I would have thought Jackson would have been popular enough here would have carried him. But he was a very close race. He barely beat an anti-Jackson candidate. And back then, once you won the Democrat primary, you were elected. But it's a very close race, and he ended up winning. And he had a very eventful term. He established the Commission of Education, which is now a form of that still exists today. He also started selling the land for the University of Missouri system. Now, he didn't form it, or I'm not sure he picked the location, but if it wouldn't have been for his time, which that was not an easy sell to make at the time, he helped was the leading figure to get the starting to sell the plots of land to put together the money to start the University of Missouri system. And I believe there's still a large plaque to that work on the campus of Columbia to this day. He then resigned a few months early because President Jackson, who he was a loyal follower of, made him the federal land commissioner. And he in one of his last acts, he helped draw the boundary for Missouri and Arkansas. He has one of the most beautiful grave sites. If you're ever in Jefferson County or heading up to St. Louis, duck off there at Herculaneum. Now, you got to take a few turns, and it's kind of odd. It's down at the end of a road. It's not even a cul-de-sac. It's just the road stops, and it's in Herculaneum, but it overlooks the Mississippi River. It's one of the most beautiful grave sites you'd ever see. It is literally right beside a very nice house, but it's not a mansion. It's just a house, you know, but it's very well maintained, but the state has done a great job, and it is one of the most beautiful grave sites you'll ever see for a man who was very accomplished. He ended up dying. He got pneumonia from being caught out in a storm one time, and never got healthy again. But that is a legacy of public service that definitely I would say Washington County, Missouri could be proud of. Mr. Reed, I want you to tell me a story though. Tell me about Bell Star.
Well, I was raised out here, and we got a little town, a little community about 8 miles west of here. It's called Shirley, Missouri. Well, Bell Star was one of the highway people, I guess, and with around the Sand Hildebrand, and then the Bush or Jaywalkers, was it?
The Bushwhackers over there.
You're right. And there was stories that out where Sunning Lake is located, that there was a cabin that her family owned, and she married a guy by the name of James Reed, who was one of her husbands, and that's how I remembered it a little bit. And who was the other famous outlaw she married?
I don't remember. I know what you're talking about.
Yeah. And Jerry, you might add to that a little bit with the family and that, but that was raised out there about 7-8 miles from here that family was in there, and again, right between here and San Francisco County, she was pretty famous. Infamous.
That's an interesting. I mean, it's funny how time goes by and you take notes of them folks. I can tell you, I went to a little high school at Neelyville, Missouri, and you know, sometimes I think I think some folks in the state think poor folks only exist in St. Louis and Kansas City, just certain parts of it. But I can take it in the other Missouri and show you some poor folks, you know. And when you're in St. Louis, you know, in the course of your life, you're going to drive by huge buildings and really, you know, big houses and things. It's interesting in rural Missouri to have people like that to look up to that have been successful, that come from places like Washington, Missouri. You know, that's an interesting, those examples I think matter sometimes more to us out in rural Missouri than they do in the city where, you know, you see poverty, but you see large success too all the time.
Let's talk about the business community. Let's talk about today. Commissioner, obviously being at the bank, you see all the business trends forward and backwards. The town was founded on mining, and now it's got a prison and different things, a little tourism. Tell me about the business community in Washington County today.
Well, that was something that, you know, I really wanted to do. It was one of my reasons, along with Doug, of, you know, trying to be elected, was to grow our community. Business, obviously, is what you need, you know, for tax base and for employment, for jobs. We've been successful in the last couple of years with getting some businesses here. We have a big industrial park that we're trying to desperately to fill up. We've landed a new business last year, Midwest Embroidery. They moved over here from Farmington. They employ about 35 people. They built a 100,000 square foot building. There's a couple other Webster Fabric. There's another KB Pods is starting to do some things out there. So it's starting to grow. I think you just have to reach out to these people and try to get them here. I think that's the big misconception is you have a big piece of land and you offer all these things and you think everybody's going to beat your door down to come in. You know, we have an IDA board that works diligently trying to get business here. You know, that's their job. You know, we're pretty lucky in the sense that we actually have a tax that supports that. Mm-hmm. So we're able to help businesses, you know, new startup businesses or existing businesses with financially. It's got to be. I mean, you know, people, I mean, most of them now are looking.
What kind of success rate are you seeing? How long have been able to do that? That's interesting.
I don't have the exact numbers on how many has come in. I know that we have people, you know, weekly contact, you know, the mm-hmm. IDA. You know, and like
so
I said.
So how did you get the tax? Well, what is this? Is it a sales tax driven? What's it? Is it motel tax?
It's a sales tax that they've had for, I don't know, Chris, I don't know, you might know how long it's.
I think that it's got to be going on, probably, I would say close to 20 years.
Yeah, it's every.
It's been approved like three times following, yeah. You know.
Yeah, it's I think every 6 years they've voted.
Give me a business or two that is benefited from that.
The Midwest, Midwest Embroidery, and I think he changed his name. I'm not sure.
Oh, Red Wing.
Midwest Textiles.
Yeah, Midwest Textiles.
Red Wing.
Red Wing Shoe Company. You know, we actually have two IDAs. We have a city IDA and we have a county IDA. The county IDA is driven by the sales tax. The city IDA does not receive tax money per se, but we have two entities that are working to.
What's the rationale for that?
I'm not certain with the city IDA. I think they've got.
I got an old buddy Butch Anderson, commissioner down in Butler County. His always interest was they get a lot of tax money from the city, but they don't ever pave a road they think the city might annex one day. They pave them out in Cuban and Fitz, not necessarily close to town.
I don't know. Was the city IDA?
Well, it depended on the property because see right. the what happened. One of the things that happened that kind of drove I think that part of it was. We, of course, like a lot of small Missouri towns, were a shoe factory town. You know, back years ago, that was one of the mainstays for a whole lot of rural Missouri.
Brown Shoe was big here.
But, you know, we had shoe factories. Well, one of the things that happened whenever those shoe factories went out was you had their building. And that's where that kind of flipped, and we had that as an asset to offer some other things. And so that's, I think, part of how that got driven. And there's been some property up there that was actually adjoining that was considered the city IDA park. At one time, right. And it's developed, you know, as it's gone on. So there was some hand-in-hand things, I think, that went back and forth. And I think their rationale was that, well, in the city, you got to work with the city, you know, utilities, different things like that, whereas the county, you know, you pretty much got the county as a whole. Now, they did drive the enterprise zone, which they had for several years. The state actually maintained for a long time. That has gone kind of everywhere now. You know, that's all changed too. Yeah. But that was part of what I think drove the county and the city both having the separate and they worked together.
Now, tell me about the prison and how that came to be here.
30 years this year. They're actually celebrating an anniversary of their establishment.
Now, 1986.
I've always heard there's a state senator named Danny Staples that might have made that happen.
Yeah.
Danny had a lot to do with it, and he was from down in Shannon County. The gentleman from Shannon County, Danny was a great guy, and I knew that it was here, and I was actually working for the Department of Corrections at that time in Algoa, and the community had the backing
here, the 500 people, they rented three or four big buses and went to the Capitol.
I heard a story about that. I heard Danny got it built, right, through horse trading and years of favors, and he pushed all his chips in the center and got the prison built, and then they wouldn't fund it to operate it right away. So he had this big, nice prison built, and they weren't really staffing it yet and hiring up on it. So then he had the whole community come up, and then he shamed them into funding the prison they built. And that story, I was in grade school when all that went down, but I'd always heard from working in the Capitol later that it was one of the best projects ever done politically, because he just pretty much carried the water on it, and he had the community come up when they wouldn't fund that. They wouldn't fund running it. So he finally just twisted their arm into making that happen.
Well, I think that it was actually built as it was the first lease purchase prison in the state of Missouri.
Right? Yes. That
and that's part of part of that story funding, that you're talking about. That was that funding issue, because the money wasn't there. What happened back then, our business, we're also in the printing business, we printed thousands of postcards, we printed posters, and we printed all kinds of stuff, got it around everywhere. And what was going on at that time was we had folks that wanted jobs, and we needed employment. And that's where that kind of came from, and that grew. And there was more than one trip to Jeff City, and there were campaigns here locally, and contacted every elected official you could think of. And after they got tired of hearing the squealing for a long time, I think they kind of gave in, because
see how it works?
The groundbreaking was August 14th, 1986. And the reason I know that is I just took my dad's shovel. He always was big about whenever he took a picture, he liked to have a memento. And he ended up with one of the shovels from the groundbreaking.
That's awesome.
So I just took it out to the prison. They're actually putting together a little display to celebrate their anniversary.
Well, that's great.
So, but that was part of that story, because it was one of the first lease purchase projects, because they didn't have the money.
Let's talk about the electric. That's always a big thing. This is Ameren service area, a little maybe Crawford Co-op on the western edge. Talk about the schools. The first actual common school built here was in Liberty Township in 1854. Tell me about the schools here in the county. I guess Potosi has its own, right? Yeah, then what else
we have
you got?
Potosi High School. In the north end of the county, you have Kingston High School, which encompasses kind of the northeast. And then you have Richwoods, which serves through grade 8. We also have a parochial school down in Old Mines, which I believe right now runs pre-K through 6th grade.
I went to one of them.
And then
we got Valley of Caledonia.
60, 65 students, and then, yeah, like Jim says, they have a Valley of Caledonia.
Now, what's interesting is when you have the company towns, they went from mining and things, you have a rich newspaper history, kind of follows that. Mm-hmm. So what I read was the first newspaper that came in was the Miner Prospect in September of 1846 by Philip Ferguson and F.A. Dalyan. And that's it right there. That's a redo of it.
That's actually a reproduction for the Austin Festival. I brought you a few of those, so you can take those with you.
I want one. You bet.
You can peruse that. The Miner's Prospect. We actually had a copy of the Miner's Prospect from 1852 that we gave to the Historical Society some years ago.
We have one 1848.
Do you have an 1848? Yeah. Well, that was kind of a basis. Technology has changed things now, but that was kind of a basis on where everybody went to for their information. And it was kind of I kind of look at it as it held a community together to a degree, because, that was kind of what the newspapers did. The newspaper went on to go through some different hands, and the Independent Journal, just to explain that just a little bit, and everybody says, boy, it's a long name. Well, yeah, it is. It was two newspapers that were put together. And it actually has a hyphen in Independent Journal, because it was the two put together, and that's how they did it. So, the newspaper itself, I think, has a kind of an important history, and I think that's true for every community.
Yeah.
I don't think it's just here or there or anywhere. I think that, and people don't realize the source.
If you travel the state, you can tell. There's two things that'll tell you about a community, and how it views itself is that newspaper. Locally, does it maintain its local roots? Even if it's corporate, there's some corporate papers that have maintained that local root. And then you can tell by the banking. If there's a healthy local banking community, it means there's a healthy business community. Mm-hmm. Those two aren't different. And really, how much a community cares about itself and the pride is, you can tell by the quality of the newspaper.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that you see it a lot. And as we talked earlier a little bit, our family has been in it, and I'm the third generation.
Yeah,
is what I am. My my grandpa and my great uncle started it as a business partnership. They actually bought it from Wilson Bell, and that's to me is an interesting story. He wanted to be a politician. That was his goal. He went on to be the state treasurer for a short time.
Is that right?
Uh huh. And he used the newspaper to campaign. So that was.
Fair and balanced.
And those, that time. So, but no, I think that's part of that's part of the important thread that I think everybody has, because you know we've got to remember our history. Our history is so important, and I think that's a big asset. I just think that's what that's all about.
Well, I always want to thank everybody for letting us come here. We're at the fairgrounds here in Washington, Missouri. Thank our sponsor one more time, the Missouri Association of Co-ops, that the Crawford Co-op here on the western side of the touches here in Washington County, Missouri Association of Counties, and the Missouri Association of the counties put together. It is an interesting thing. There's so many things you learn from being a member of that. So much time they spend lobbying. I've seen you had Trent Watson in the Capitol. That is, if you didn't have somebody watch your back at the county level, there in the Capitol, our courthouse would look very different. You'd have a lot of folks from St. Lucie, Kansas City, telling a lot of folks in places like Washington County how they ought to run things. And then the Missouri Farm Bureau. There's, if you ever go up to Jeff City or you ever look in the media, there's hundreds of people there watching out for the cities, and then rightfully so. There's a few groups, but always led by Farm Bureau looking out for rural Missouri. So if you're not a member, you ought to think about doing that and do your part and pitch in. I want to thank everybody for letting us be here, but the last question I always ask everybody, and I'll start with you, Chris. If you had a friend come in for the weekend, where would you take him in Washington County? What would you have them know about the people that live here?
Well, I think one of the things that I always promote, and I was involved with the Chamber of Commerce for years and years, and I understand that visitors, whenever you visit, part of that tourist trend is just part of that thinking, I think. Some of the things that we have, one of the things that I really enjoy about our community, our county, is that we are so rural and that we have so much outdoors. I mean, that's something I think that we really get to pride ourselves on. You know, we sit here on the edge of Mark Twain National Forest, we talk about thousands of acres that all the public can use. But if you come to Washington County and you're going to come in and drop in for a couple days, I'd probably take you to the YMCA of the Ozarks and might put you up out there and have you stay out there. And whenever you talk about that real briefly, just to give you an example, it's out in the middle of the woods, sits on a 300-acre spring-fed lake, got about a 65-room hotel, and nobody knows that it's there, hardly. And so it's a pretty neat little place, and it follows the YMCA principles and a nice layout, all kinds of activities to do. You can head several different directions, and you can visit all kinds of parks and areas. And I always said that we're kind of the gateway to the Missouri State Parks St. Louis, because mm-hmm. you've got the shut-ins, and you've got the Elephant Rocks, and you've got some of those well-known places, but then you've got some that are less traveled. And I mean, there's just so many things to do. And if you like the outdoors, you can just about go any direction from here.
Mr. Jerry Sanzagraw, the unofficial historian of Washington County. If you had somebody come in from out of town for the day, where would you take them? And what would you have them know about the folks that live here?
Where would I take them?
Yeah.
Well, being a historian,
I would have
to take them to our museum.
All right. Now, for somebody listening to this, tell them where that's at here. Is in Potosi, I assume.
Yes.
Whereabouts is it?
We have more than one, really.
Yeah.
We have the Banner House, located up on Clark Street. And then we have the old Presbyterian Church building. It's on Britton Street. Mm-hmm. And then down on Jefferson in South Missouri, we have the Lucas House. And then we have a log cabin that we tore down and restored and put up. And all of these have got all the artifacts that's in every one of them are artifacts that was donated from people in the county that their ancestors actually used. So there's nothing bought mm-hmm. out of a store to stick in to decorate anything. So all the stuff was original stuff, you know. So with this, people can get an idea of how people lived years ago, and that's the first thing that I would
now, they, is that online? Can they? Is there a Facebook page for it? How would folks find out more about it?
Yeah,
it
we have a Facebook page.
And what, they just Washington County Missouri Historical Society?
Yeah, I forget, what is it? I don't even remember.
Is it under Minor Breton?
I don't remember. I don't take care of it. I got other people to take care of it. I don't even remember the name.
Well, Hunter's good at computers. He'd probably figure that out.
The Historical Society is actually called the Minor Breton Historical Society.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's the name for
it.
That
may be what it's saying. I don't, like I said, I don't mess with that part. I let the younger ones do that.
I'm getting old enough where I start saying things just like that.
But that'd be the first thing that I would take. And like Chris was saying, I'm an outdoors person myself. And that would be the second thing that I would recommend is go to the parks and the outdoor things that we have around the area, because there's plenty to see.
Commissioner Short, if somebody's coming in from out of town, where would you take them, and what would you have to know about the folks here?
Well, I've lived here my whole life when I was in the military, and then there are some great people that live in this county. And the area is beautiful. 25 to 30% of our county is conservation or state forest. So the pretty much the whole southern part is a beautiful drive. And if you want to see some of the prettiest creeks in the state, almost all of our creeks are rock bottom creeks. The water's clear. It's absolutely beautiful. So, and there's not many other places in Missouri that have that. Down south they do, but when you north of here, they're pretty much dirt bottom creeks. So
yep.
Our creeks are wonderful. And as Chris said, it's a gateway to the parks, to Washington County.
Mr. Reed, if you had somebody come in from out of town, where would you take them here in the county, and what would you have to know about the folks here?
Oh, I'm going to just hit off what Doug and Chris both said a little bit. I know when we bring people in from Jeff City, they come down here. They come around AA, past Sunning Lake, YMCA, Edgecliff Farms out there. We've got the hills and the timber. I'm a big hunter, avid hunter and fisherman. You know, the creeks are close to the area here. It's kind of centrally located, like we talked about Elephant Rock and different Johnson shut-ins and that. That's all within 30 minutes of here. And that's the type of, you know, it's some of the best deer hunting in the area, mm-hmm. I think. Is for me, anyway, and the turkey hunting and
humble brag.
Doug's a big turkey hunter too, but I have hunted in the same areas a lot. But I just like seeing the small town stuff, the small farmers, and seeing what they're doing. And being with Farm Bureau as long as we've had, everybody networks, and we just, you know, I'm trying to get that concept to everybody in the county.
Yep.
It works so well throughout the state. You know, I needed something the other day in Cape County, and I called Farm Bureau President in Cape County. And he said, be down there tomorrow at 10 o'clock and get it. And, you know, it worked out pretty well. We do have a good
can't be having friends.
And that. But, the outdoors is wonderful. Mark Twain National Forest. We got the Berryman Trail. We got a hiking trail outside of town here in the county. Council Bluff Lake is huge. For fishermen, there's just so much to do for outdoors.
Commissioner Sanzagraw, if you had, let's say you had old Vince Lampy come up for the day out of Butler County, where would you take him? What would you have him know about the folks that live here in Washington County?
Well, I think we have a very good community. We have from top to bottom. You can go from, you know, Richwoods to Caledonia to Shirley to, you know, Old Mines. We've got a lot to offer. I'll touch on what Doug said. The southern part of the county, we have, the Caledonia area, Belgrade area is very nice. They got beautiful farms. They've got the little community of Caledonia's got a bed and breakfast. They've got different things to offer. Our downtown area in Potosi has got, the shops. You know, they've really added a lot of shopping for people. The old time, Reed's Relics and different places like that have really come about. And they bring a lot of people in looking and shopping, it's a friendly atmosphere. I mean, everybody's willing to help and, to give you a hand and say hi. I think our entire county has a lot to be desired. There's a lot of good people here, and they're here because, they want to live a rural life, and, we're glad about that, and we welcome folks here.
I want to thank everybody for letting us be here at the Washington County Fairgrounds here in Potosi. Show Missouri, the history of Missouri, one county at a time, and we will talk to you next week on Show Missouri. See you then.
We are Missouri Farm Bureau Insurance, and we're for home sweet home. We're for condos, tutors, single wides, and studios. or for ranches, houseboats, two stories or 20. Red cedar, bluebirds, white squirrels, black walnuts, whatever's out your back door, we're for that. Or for watching the sun rise over the Mississippi and set over the Missouri. Or for kicking off your heels in a high rise or hanging up your hat in the boot heel. And if you have a home in Missouri, we have a policy for you. We are Missouri Farm Bureau Insurance, and we've got Missouri covered.